Hello, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a podcast from the Lansing State Journal and Detroit Free Press focused on Michigan State sports. I'm Phil Friend, your host and producer. Joining me this week are two sports writers who love a 7:30 p.m. start to a football game. It's Detroit Free Press beat writer Chris Solari and Lansing State Journal sports columnist Graham Couch. Chris, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. You know what the best part about that 7:30 p.m. kickoff is? I've got about 11 more days to do some sleep banking.
We know that worked very well for the Michigan State football team on its trip to Washington. So I expect a 100% success rate there for you, Chris. Graham, how are you?
I'm well. And I actually appreciate it because I'll just be up for the Premier League game still on Sunday. So You're going to do it. The 4 o'clock games are almost worse because then you're waking up on short sleep. So give me 7:30 all day. I'll sleep during the NFL games.
This transition to you being a soccer guy over the past year and a half is quite something, Graham. And that comes from someone who has been following soccer for quite a long time.
that's one way to put it. Quite something is very much one way to put it.
Yeah. Well, I discovered the light, so to speak. You know, I saw the light. And I've always been a soccer guy to some degree, but I realized, hey, a sport that's more aesthetically pleasing, that doesn't have four-minute commercial breaks every 30 seconds, is actually where I'd rather spend my free time.
Yeah, being in and out of a game in 2 hours is definitely one of the perks of being a soccer fan and watching all the soccer. But I digress.
Yeah, the downside is, of course, watching the soccer.
Oh, got to appreciate the beautiful game in some aspects, Chris.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's not
ugly
talk about
American.
All right, well, let's not talk about soccer anymore. Let's move on to Michigan State football, which is coming off a big win on Saturday, which was also homecoming as the Spartans defeated Wisconsin. And that gives them a little bit of momentum heading into what is the bye week this week. And then, of course, the Michigan game in Ann Arbor at the end of the month. So, Chris, you know, that win on Saturday ended a four-game losing streak for the Spartans. What positive takeaways can we see from that? Is Jacoby Windman moving the linebacker and then the shift from to the five DBs to the 4-3? I mean, I suspect those are things we're going to see for at least a couple games here.
Yeah, I would think so as well, because a lot of these teams coming up are power run teams that, you know, that obviously gave them a little bit of an edge, and it seemed to have helped the back end a little bit. Now, they're not going to face a quarterback like Graham Mertz the rest of the season, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Right, right.
You know, the quarterbacks are going to be better than that. But, you know, obviously, like we talked about last week, if you lose that game to Wisconsin, the chances of making a bowl are almost nil. Now you're at three wins. You need three in the last five, which isn't going to be easy anyways, because three of those teams are ranked. Illinois is playing much better. You've got Michigan up next on the road. You've got Illinois after that on the road. You got Penn State at Penn State. So you got to get one of those three plus hold court at home, which they weren't able to do against Minnesota. So that in and of itself, being able to kind of get a better feeling at home, get the win and keep that bowl possibility alive, is so critical, because this is a team that needed that hope and needed that carrot out there. I think if had they lost that game, it might have been hard to summon up the energy for those last four games. It won't be in 11 days or whenever it is that the Michigan game is. That's always going to be a game. It's what will come after that. Like, how would this team, knowing that they only have two, maybe three wins, if they somehow would have pulled a Michigan upset, how would they have handled that the rest of the season? But this was certainly something. Getting back in that left side of the column brought some energy going into the bye week.
It was because of it's not just so much what's still at stake because they won this game. It's a couple things. One, it's the misery it prevents. I just think that it was going to be a tough place to pull themselves out of mentally. And then you go to Michigan and then you play Illinois, who maybe is nearly as good as Michigan. And so you're almost certainly you know, 2-7 at that point. And instead, a couple things happen. One, yeah, you're still playing for a bowl game. And I don't even think getting a bowl game this year is all that important in the grand scheme of things. But what you're probably going to be doing at the bare minimum is playing for a bowl game up into the final week. So there's something always still at stake. And I think that matters. And I think if the end of the end of the day, your disastrous season that went poorly is 5-7 and you're playing for something up to the final game and going into signing day. And I don't think that's the end of the world. I think the other thing was they found some things that were improved. And like Chris said, there will be more challenging opponents. And I do think Wisconsin's defense is as bad as they've been in a while. But I also think that, you know, there are things that they can say, boy, if we can do this, this can carry over. Some of the stuff with their playmakers and Jaden Reed playing at a level that he hasn't yet this year, and what that does for guys like Keon Coleman and Peyton Thorne. You see Malik Carr get back involved. Now, all that to me is predicated on the offensive line at least being able to hold up. But there becomes this sort of bit. If you can do that, those guys can cause problems for every team. Every team they're playing from this point forward is much more run-centric. Now, they may decide to pick on Michigan State's pass defense. But so some of the stuff that – and that said, I thought Wisconsin ran the ball pretty effectively at times. So that wasn't like Michigan's going to cause serious problems perhaps. But there were things on the defensive side, having Xavier Henderson back and having Jacoby Winmon look that natural at linebacker. So there are some things that they can draw on and say – they might just be a little bit better now, and it gives them a chance to be more competitive the rest of the way.
Braylon Allen's a beast. I'm not, you know, I say that about Graham Mertz. I'm not sure they face another running back quite like Braylon Allen. Not that they don't face good running backs, but
I was going to say, I think Blake Corum will have something to say about that.
Well, I'm not saying that they're not facing those kind of running backs, like good running backs and really good running backs. I'm just saying the size factor that he has and his downhill ability. You know, he is a load to try and bring down. You know, the other, you know, obviously but they've had success up front. I mean, obviously getting Jacob Slade back changes that front four immeasurably, because now you can get Simeon Barrow, who's played well, but you know, you're starting to see in that game when he doesn't get double teamed like he had been, boy, he's able to come off and show that burst. And both of those guys were able to collapse the pocket at times and get that pressure that helps the coverage. I think if there's a detriment to what they showed, I mean, I think part of it is you have to get that game experience if you're going to use more of a base 4-3. But now the element of surprise isn't there and the tape is out. So opposing offensive coordinators now have a little bit of an idea of some weak spots in it that they can attack. And you know, will they be able to keep a team under 300 yards again? I mean, who knows? But it certainly caught Wisconsin off guard and they weren't able to adjust to it. But it'll be curious to see, because I do think they would like to be able to blend that 4-2-5 with some 4-3 and, you know, other elements. That's something that I think Mel Tucker and Scotty Hazelton both talked about kind of being multiple coming into the year, but they haven't been really up until this point. I'll tell you, Graham, I don't know about you, but watching Winmon at linebacker kind of makes you scratch your head and go, what if he was there along with Darius Snow, and how much different would that 4-2-5 have looked with those two guys there to be able to cover out in space and come down and run support?
Well, it also makes you wonder, like, why they didn't see that earlier. Like, there are some things about this game.
I think they saw it. I mean, he talked about being thin at defensive end.
That doesn't make sense. Like, they didn't really get much back at defensive end. Like,
I think they're thinner now than they were at the beginning of the season
right,
at defensive
right.
end.
Like, to me, and I look, there. So we've talked sort of about the positive of it, and I think there were some things, though, that were concerning about the game. I don't think the coaching staff did anything to turn the confidence meter in them around. And so, on one hand, you've got this culture and this team that played hard and has not quit on the season. And you did credit to Scotty Hazelton and that defensive staff. They found something and they got some guys healthy and they switched to something that worked more effectively. And the flip side of that, you had some game management and clock management late in that game that concerned people, because again, it's like Dan Campbell and the Lions, right? It's not the biggest deal right now, but eventually you're going to be playing for something that really, really means something. And you don't want to, you want to be able to trust your coach in those settings. But I also think that I do like the Winmon thing. Like, he obviously had two great games at defensive end to start the year. So I get why you think that's working. And then, you know, it doesn't really work but I think after the Minnesota game, moving him before the Maryland game might have had some effect or something, because he just looks like he's in such a natural linebacker and has so much more ability to be creative as a playmaker there and have an impact on the game that he did at defensive end. And I'm not saying they beat Maryland, because the defense wasn't awful that day. I mean, it just seems like they might have been able to do this a little sooner.
Yeah, I think it was also, granted you touched upon this, it was just nice to have what appeared to be a healthy Jaden Reed there on the offense, and you saw what a healthy Jaden Reed can do. He's a guy you can find in almost all instances and for key plays and whatnot, and the Thorn to Reed connection, you know, finally clicked for the first time in seven games this year, so that'll be something I think they can hang their hat on moving forward.
He looks like a guy, like a serious guy is a problem for people, and they need that, and they have not had that.
Yeah, and he had the punt return touchdown that was called back. Yeah. So, yes.
Well, you know, what's funny about that is that I mean, it is cliche that, you know, and I get fans, you know, kind of bristling at hearing that multiple times per game and week in, week out about Reed and Thorne having played together since middle school. But, I mean, you can't say enough about the connection that the two have built over that time, because that's a lot of football. That's a lot of football knowledge and experience and snaps between them shared. And especially for a team like this that's brought in so many transfers over the course of the last few years that don't have that level of experience together. That's important. That's really important. I mean, you see at times, you know, that, I mean, the check that he made, Thorne at the line in overtime, he knew he had his guy isolated one-on-one. And, you know, he knows where he wants the ball. You know, he knows how to throw it. And Reed knows how the ball is going to come to him and where it's going to come. That's a lot. That's a lot of things that make that connection so vital to this team, you know, from whenever they started playing together to now, because, you know, they need that. That offense needs that. And when that connection is working, that allows everything else around it to flow.
Yeah, Graham, I want to revisit something you said earlier, talking about maybe not positives to take away. I was listening to the radio call of the game on Saturday, at least in the fourth quarter, and I had no idea what happened on the final play. The radio guy goes, they're running onto the field to attempt the game-winning field goal. Long pause. Berenger throws it. Long pause. Commercial. 3 minutes later, we get an explanation of what happened. So I had no idea what happened on that. But that was but then after I went back and, you know, watched the video, that was just not good, Graham, like you were saying.
Well, yeah, and I feel bad. I love Blaha; he's a legend. So I that's not a great moment for George. But you know what? The Pistons are starting, so he's got bigger things on his mind.
Yeah.
And I'll always protect George Blaha, like he's.
Yeah, you know, yeah. No, I'm not throwing shade. It was just hilarious. And I'm just like,
oh, no, yeah,
what happened here? What happened here, guys?
Yeah, and you know, so there are a couple things that were a little puzzling on that drive. Like they used their timeouts on some runs early, and then didn't have one when they needed it, and then you had sort of that weird, obvious play that was snuffed out where, you know, Reed's inbounds and it forces the fire drill. I don't actually usually hate the fire drill, because I believe the less kickers can think, the better. Like I actually think as long as you've got time to do it, that's better for the kicker sometimes not to have like the timeouts and all that stuff. But you also got a backup long snapper in this set.
Yep.
And so being settled was much more important than it would be in normal times. And so that was just, you know, it was not a great final drive. And it's not that it's unforgivable. It's not that great coaches don't make mistakes. It's just that when you're a staff that is, you know, went from a year ago where everything seemed very, very competent, and then you have a year where things haven't felt that way. There's just, I understand why people are a little concerned, and you don't want to, you know, nobody likes having the coach who's time management or game management they can't trust. And it doesn't mean, look, for years, everybody made fun of Andy Reid for that, right? And still do to some degree, but he's won a Super Bowl. He's got Pat Mahomes. They're great. You don't hear that anymore. It's not like it has to become a thing. It's just that in this particular game, it certainly was. The other thing is, I think it's just important if you're for the staff to feel like it's ahead of the fan base on things. You don't want, like, the Elijah Collins thing. Every fan has said, well, they can see it, and it took a while to get him in there. Like, you don't want to feel like you're being pulled along into something. And I'm not saying they are necessarily. You want to be introducing fans to something like, oh my gosh, look what the staff knew it had. And this is, you know, and it's sort of the opposite with him too. So there are a couple little things I think that have people a little frustrated, but overall that just a massive win and changes the mindset and the spirit of things heading into the Michigan game.
Yeah, that you hit it right on the head with that last possession. I mean, that is the ultimate KYP, right? Know your personnel. I mean, you have to know you have a backup long snapper in there. You have to know that backup long snapper hasn't been, he hasn't had any major flubs, but there have been some things that you looked at and it was a little bit tenuous. So you kind of, you're right. You got to put them in the best position to succeed. I'm not necessarily sure if that was the best position. You know, obviously Patton, who was really in his first full game as kicker, he missed one down at Maryland and then was yanked for Jack Stone again. And they've had problems in the kicking game as it is. You don't want to make the problem worse. You don't want to exacerbate the issues. And ultimately, I mean, credit Behringer, by the way, because, you know, there was one play for him to make at that point, and it wasn't try and run for a first down. It wasn't anything. It was literally throw it up downfield and see if something can happen. And, you know, it obviously got picked off, but that was the only play. But you shouldn't have them in that moment. You shouldn't be running, to me, you know, down the line of scrimmage, throwing the ball. I know you only need a couple yards for a first down, but, you know, that was as easily snuffed out maybe as any play MSU had all day. I mean, Wisconsin's defensive back was all over that. So, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, the other thing, we talk about that one, the other end of the half play was even weirder because they get the ball somewhere around like the 35-40 yard line. Basically, you either have a chance for one play or take a knee. Well, not only do they try one play, they try and throw the ball. Well, they throw the ball down the line of scrimmage again to Tyler Hunt, of all people, because he's not going to go 65 yards for a touchdown. So why would you even put the ball in the air at that moment if it's not meant to score? Because the risk reward there is quite literally a pick six the other way if it's read anywhere near like what the Jaden Reed play was read. So yeah, there were a couple kind of really puzzling moves by Jay Johnson and in that whole game that I thought were kind of, but then he goes out and runs an end around pass for Jaden Reed to Keon Coleman. Yep. Right after it. So, I mean, you know, high risk, high reward sometimes is good, but I mean, you know, you're never going to call a perfect game, but you got to know the moment. You got to know the personnel.
Well, I would say that's just a microcosm of the entire Mel Tucker, Jay Johnson era. It seems like they are really flying by the seat of their pants a lot of times in all of these games.
Well, sometimes. But I would say this. When you don't have, throughout some time, a line that you can rely upon, it is tough. Like, your game plan is predicated on being able to do certain things, and all of a sudden you can't do them, which affects everything. And so I do think I think it's very hard to call a game if you're not winning up front. And like, I just don't blame them at all for like Ohio State. And I thought, you know, there were some moments in this game I thought that were really, you know, there's times you're like, they're on the goal line and they're running out of a shotgun. You're going, and it doesn't work. But then there were some other, like the Jalen Berger touchdown run with just, you know, some really good motion misdirection stuff that led to that. Like, so it's, you know, unless you're, I mean, it's interesting when you talk to coaches about this, sometimes coaches who watch the game be like, yeah, I actually thought that was called really well. And people really know the sport. And then other times people say, yeah, you know, it seems like he'd be doing a lot more of this. So, you know, I think it's a mixed bag, and it's a tough job, and it's I think the biggest thing that comes out of that, though, is the guy who was under the most fire, Hazleton, certainly I think had himself a day and had himself an adjustment, and it worked. And, yeah, Xavier Henderson, Jacob Slade, a big part of that is Winmon move, part of that. Yeah, but those are still, I mean, he had those guys at his disposal. And now we'll see, you know, what they're able to do against a couple opponents that are really feeling themselves, because obviously Michigan is zeroed in on beating Michigan State, and then Illinois is having that initial rise year and could wind up winning the West. So when you play those sort of teams where things are going right for them and they're creating, you know, and they've got some matchups that are going to be problems for you, this is when the staff's got to earn its money.
Yeah, I don't know how much you guys saw the Michigan-Penn State game, but it was a game that was similar to the Ohio State-Michigan game last year, where it was close in the first half. In the second half, the Wolverines just kind of battered down on Penn State and really padded up that scoreline there a little bit. And we're 11 days away from that game, but I know, Graham, you've already offered a couple couples on Twitter, so it's just going to be a long 11 days for anybody associated with those two programs.
Yeah, as long as you can have fun with it.
There's no such thing as having fun on Twitter with these two teams, unfortunately.
if you're not invested, like, you're a Ball State guy, like, for you, I mean, I get it. But if you're a fan of one of these sides, I can totally understand why this is, you know, is enjoyable. So,
yeah, Ball State big win against UConn this weekend. So
there you go.
You know, inching our way toward bowl eligibility, and that's coming off beating Central the week before. So, boom. Sorry, Central Michigan alums who also listen to this podcast.
I'm just curious. Did Graham just call them sides?
Yes. He is a
wow.
True soccer guy.
I mean, we're going to have to add random soccer references Western Michigan and South Dakota references here.
I'm not going to be that dumb American announcer who calls something level, because that's not something we say in this country, and they need to understand that. Nor will I get my tenses wrong or my, you know, like, Portland have scored. No, has scored. I like just because they're doing something in England doesn't mean we have to change our whole language around it. Sorry, little tangent.
Yeah. I like level. I use it in soccer stories, but I don't use it in other sports when describing something. So
this discussion is nil nil.
Yeah. That's a bye week. So, you know what? We got a little freedom here. I don't know. How much do you guys want to dive into the Michigan game, or we can kind of put that off to next week? I thought maybe we could maybe just kind of look at the Spartans in a big picture view and like a midseason report card type thing here with the break here. So I kind of want to start there, and I'll have you go first here, Graham. You know, obviously they're 3-4 at the moment after the win on Saturday, and I don't think this is where we thought they would be at this point, or maybe you did. I did not go back and revisit your predictions column before either of your guys' prediction column before the season started. But I mean, I assume based on the way we've talked about these guys in every single podcast this season, I've got to believe that you kind of feel this has been a pretty good tinge of disappointment for what the Spartans have done so far in 2022.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, they've been ravaged by injuries at the wrong spot. They didn't have enough depth in those places to overcome it. Looking back on it, like, some of it is our own foolishness. Some of it is sort of the air about the program, though. I mean, there's a lot of swagger coming into this year, right? And recruiting and Tuck coming and all this stuff. And you know, so there wasn't this – There wasn't the staff. Like, I've covered teams before where, you know, members of the staff would kind of pull you inside and go, you know, this could be a struggle. Like, or this is, you know, or these guys, people think we might win this. And there wasn't that sense, right? And maybe there just aren't those relationships yet. But I think that's part of it. But when you look back on it, the idea that we thought that the Washington game without Jaden Reed, without Jacob Slade, without Xavier Henderson, going west to play that offense and that setting was anything but what it was is really ridiculous now in hindsight. Yeah. And we have the ability to see hindsight. So there are certain things. I think that the games that are bad, I do not think that Washington is that big a deal. Ohio State is what it is. They actually did some decent things. I think the game that stands out more than anything is Minnesota.
Oh yeah, yep.
They were just non-competitive that day.
Yeah,
and you know that's they really played unacceptable football for any year. And then the Maryland game was sort of weird and interesting. And Maryland was feeling itself a little bit at the time coming off that Michigan game. And they were and Maryland's got some things that Michigan State doesn't. But I think that's the sort of game if things are going well, you can win. Like for example, if they were to play that game next week. And obviously, I know Maryland's got its own injury now at the quarterback position. But even healthy, I think that might be a different game. Michigan State feeling a little different about itself, a little healthier. Michigan State would not have gone 0-3 in those three games with the roster they put on the field against Wisconsin. And I do believe that.
Chris, what about you? Your overall thoughts and observations set through seven games.
You can't look at this team and not see the injuries that, you know, particularly Slade and Henderson. I think those two were guys and Snow to a lesser degree because we don't know exactly how he would have looked at linebacker, but by all accounts, how he played at nickel last year kind of gives you an idea that he would have been integral too. But Slade and Snow in particular, the front and the back, you know, you can direct traffic in front of you if you're Xavier Henderson. They didn't have that. And I think that, you know, that was a big, for the defense, that was a big, big loss. You know, that said, I mean, they were still getting gouged like they were last year when he was on the field. So, you know, how much can you look at that? I mean, honestly, like the issues that we knew coming into the season have been the issues that have been the problem, the offensive line and the secondary, plain and simple. I mean, you know, there hasn't been much year two over year three growth there. You know, against better offensive lines, particularly that Minnesota game, you know, against better, more experienced older guys, like in that Minnesota game, the offensive line looked bad and couldn't get any traction and failed to run the ball. And saw it again with Ohio State. Again, something that you expected in some respects, but not necessarily to the level of problem. I mean, you know, we're literally seeing them use the same six guys in the offensive line with minimal success. So where's the development of the younger guys? Because they had some guys they brought in the 21 class that they like that haven't cracked the rotation. They've got some true freshmen that it obviously takes time for to get to that level of playing Big Ten Power Five football. But if they're better than the guys that are there, you got to play them. I mean, you know, Kevin Jarvis and, you know, Nick Samak and J.D. Duplain, all those guys that were parts of that line last year, all played when they were young, freshmen, redshirt freshmen. So, you know, that'll be interesting, I think, to see if those guys make some development here to get into that rotation to change some of that in the final five games. But up to now, that's been a problem up front. And, you know, you haven't seen the things that were built with Berger and Broussard. I think Berger, you can see why Berger is ahead of the curve with the two of them. Because it seems like Broussard, every time he goes to make a touch or get a cut and you know, gets hit, he's going down because he is a smaller back. And, you know, Berger runs a little more upright with a little more power at times, but still Elijah Collins is the guy that runs with the most power and is getting fewer carries. So it's clearly a situation they have not really addressed well. And, you know, I think he got the 14 carries that Elijah Collins got last week were the most he's had since 2019. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But, yeah, I mean, and I think that those problems up front have compounded some of the issues that people have seen with Peyton Thorne, where everybody says change the quarterback. Well, you can't change the offensive line. You know, you still got an offensive line that, you know, who was blocking for Noah Kim and allowing Noah Kim to do the things he did, but it was against second and third string defenses and that were playing prevent. So you had Michigan State's ones plus Noah Kim going against backups and third stringers. So it's not a really good subset. But Thorne, I think, last week against Wisconsin showed why he's still the quarterback. And we talked about the read connection, but he was able to spread that ball around at times. That throw to Trey Mosley on the goal line to get a first down was an absolute bullet and a great read. You know, one of those plays that goes unnoticed in some ways that allowed, I think it was the Collins touchdown run, set that up. So if I looked at it at the midpoint, I think probably the biggest thing is we haven't, the problems that we thought would be the problem, might be the problems are, and those problems are bigger than any development that we've seen from other position groups and areas that of need to kind of mask those problems.
Yep. I agree with that. So what I want to do with you guys is I want to go by each position group and give each of them grades. And you guys have two different grading systems. Graham, I know you use numbers from 1 to 10. Chris, I know you use the school letter system, A to F. So you guys can continue using your normal system to evaluate these. And let's start with Graham and the offense. Where are you ranking them on a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, I struggle with the alphabet, so I stick with the numbers so I can get to 10. Yeah, I would put them at a somewhere in the three range, mm-hmm. relative to expectations. Everything is relative always to expectations, right?
Sure.
Like
yes.
People got higher scores against Ohio State than people may think they deserve. But because, you know, there have been – I think the offensive line has been largely a big disappointment, a big problem. But everything else, and I don't think Peyton Thorne has taken that step to be able to really elevate an offense. I also think he's had a tough deck to work with some of the injuries with, and then not having the line protect him. So the jury's still out on exactly what his ceiling is and where he can get to. And I think we saw some of the advantages of him. And the most recent game, I think the running backs are okay. I think the rediscovery of Elijah Collins is good. I think the receivers have we thought Keon Coleman maybe was really coming alive when the moments at Washington and whatnot, and it's taken him a little more time, and that's fine. He's just, it's good for MSU's basketball team probably, because that looks like a guy who's going to be around MSU for long enough to want to play one more year of basketball. We'll see what Malik Carr decides. But I would give it a three probably.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that I would probably go a C minus. I think that, you know, the lack of development on the offensive line, while concerning and problematic, is not unexpected. I mean, if you watch that team in the Peach Bowl without Kenneth Walker, without Kevin Jarvis, that there were issues in running the ball, and we've seen those continue against Power Five opponents throughout this season. I think that looking at the receivers, I think, you know, we haven't seen a lot of Jeremy Bernard, but there are points where you see some explosiveness with him. But they've really only rolled three deep for the most part with Reed, Coleman, and Trey Mosley. And I kind of agree with what Graham said, that, you know, Coleman has, I think, in times kind of taken a back seat because of the need for that connection with Reed and Thorne. But, you know, that second half of the Wisconsin game, you started seeing them go more and more that direction, which I think, you know, they got to complement each other. You know, you talk about complementary football, you talk about the receivers need to complement each other to allow each to get open and pull away double teams from either of them. So, and Trey Mosley, I think, has done just basically what Trey Mosley did last year. He's been a steady kind of hands guy that gets you big plays. The tight ends, I think, are a little disappointing. I really expected more until really Malik Carr's catch last week, that 72-yarder, which, you know, that was a pure coverage bust that Thorne spotted. You know, they haven't produced nearly at the level I anticipated, particularly if the run game is struggling. Those quick hitters to the tight end seem like they would be there, but, you know, we haven't seen enough, I think, of Barker Hunt and Carr, that really that they need to elevate themselves and their play a little bit. And then the running backs, you know, as I said a little bit about the Berger and Broussard, maybe the expectations were a little bit high, because everyone coming off Kenneth Walker thought you can get the next Kenneth Walker or replicate what Kenneth Walker did with a couple guys, but it's not particularly that simple, particularly with the line in front of them. Same goes with Thorne. I mean, you see the effect that Kenneth Walker had in allowing those guys to do the things that they did in the pass game a year ago. Now all the eyeballs are focused on Thorne and the receivers. You know, that's added and compounded some things, but they also have shown at times the ability to carry this team. would be interesting to see the back five games, if that continues, or if they're able to figure out some things in the run game to help alleviate some of that strain on the pass game.
Graham, your grade for the defense, or your score for the defense.
Yeah, I'd put it at a probably two and a half. You know, I do think they drew a little bit of a line in the sand last week as a staff, as a team, and got it done. And I think that was a really important moment, because before that, the grade was pretty bleak. And you know, I don't give you a ton of credit for what you did against a backup quarterback against Akron, or you know, what happened with Western Michigan. Since then, it had been, you know, they didn't force a punt against Minnesota, and you know, they struggled mightily against Washington, and you know, a little better. The second half against Maryland was, I think, some promising moments, and then Ohio State's Ohio State, so could have been worse, I guess. But the, I think, you know, the things we wondered coming into the season were the, you know, would they have a pass rusher? You know, would their secondary be improved? And for a moment, it looked like they struck gold with Winmon, and you know, he's a good college defensive end. He is not a guy who's going to make the difference that I think he can at linebacker. He looks like he might be an NFL player at linebacker, and that's where they really need to keep him. And he just seems to make a difference. And then, you know, the injuries certainly are part of the story, but I'm 2.5.
Chris.
Yeah. I'd kind of agree with Graham, probably give him around a D grade on my scale. Because the pass defense has had the problems that it has. I mean, you know, if the coaches want to continue to say that injuries don't matter and it's next man up, which I think Mel Tucker has kind of in the last couple days gone away from it as the guys got back, you know, but still you got to get the production, and that's somewhat on the coaches for, you know, a lot of different reasons. But I think that, you know, the fact that they got shredded as badly as they have in the secondary again, the fact that they failed to generate much of a pass rush during that losing streak, any at all. I mean, they had two sacks, and one of them was because a quarterback tripped on a guy's foot. You know, those are all things that were areas that they discussed needed to improve, and they didn't. And that's been a big reason that you're sitting here right now wondering if they can get the bowl eligible.
Graham, special teams.
Special teams is such a helter. Because in one sense, until this last week, you had the nation's best punter by a ways. He was on pace to, like, have the greatest season ever in punting average. And who knows, he may get that back still. He's a good, really great punter. And it, I would say, bailed him out of some things, but not, he really hadn't, because the defense would just give up whatever extra yards he got.
Yeah, right. Yep.
it really 90 plus yard drives. How many? I mean, they might set the record for 90 plus yard drives allowed in a season.
Yeah, he's almost embarrassing the defense, because then they just give up the extra 20 yards he picks up. And it is, you know, it's been inconsequential almost. And then you have moments where Jaden Reed he's had two returns for touchdowns called back. And those are inconsequential. Those are consequential, and could be that neither one cost them the game. Neither one mattered that much in the actual game they happened in. But they could. But as Jaden Reed will say, they're on tape, and that's his money. And that's when that happens, like, you can get frustrated as a fan, but, and you should. But for that guy, and that's on NFL film, and that's very important. And when people go, why, you know, will they have him still return punts? I'm going to tell you right now, I think Jaden Reed would fight Mel Tucker to the death to take him off that position, because you're pulling money out of his pocket. You better have a $4 million NIL deal ready to go or something if you're going to take him off punts. But so that said, the kicking game is not something you can trust. They have not really found somebody there, and part of that has been the situation with the long snapper. And so I would put it right down the middle, because when you've got the best punter in the country and then you've got this kicking game that's been shaky, I'd put it at a 5.
Chris?
Yeah, I would probably have to agree with the C to C minus grade, because I do think that the issues with the issues with the long snapper are certainly something that, you know, that's an injury situation, and nobody's carrying a second or third long snapper is as good as the first. That's, I mean, let's face it, that's an absolute specialist position. But the problems with the kicker, are really the ones where you look at it and you say, geez, what is going on there? Because, you know, they brought in Ben Patton in the middle of camp. That said, I mean, it more than likely had been arranged before that, but now all of a sudden in the middle of camp, you got competition that changes the dynamic of that, affects a true freshman's confidence. You know, Patton hadn't looked great when he did get in there, and now he's got the job last week. So, you know, that's something that should have been ironed out normally during camp. But when you bring a guy in the middle of camp, I'm not necessarily sure where that will fall, but you got to get production there. You can't leave the points on the board, particularly at Maryland, like you did in the kicking game. I think Stone has been average to below average on kickoffs, which has affected field position, which, you know, on that respect, that was one area where I think Matt Coughlin really did a quietly good job last year and the year before at improving not just what he did as a kicker all around, but what the coverage units were able to do and setting the defense up off kickoffs a little better position. But then you also have Behringer, who's just booming them and dropping them inside the five. And I think that's ultimately, you know, it might affect his yardage totals sometimes, but sometimes those 35, 40, 45 yarders that he puts at the one or two from a complete standpoint are astounding. I mean, not Drew Chrisman astounding, but very, very, you know, you can see why he's getting the recognition as a midseason All-American and what, you know, he might end up winning the Ray Guy Award. So, and the other thing I think that's kind of taken a hit, and Graham talked about the punt returns with Jaden Reed, and they're not going to pull him out of that, but the kickoff return has struggled without him and Naylor back there. I mean, they've gotten next to nothing between Bernard, Broussard, and Tyrell Henry, who looks like he's got a little bit of juice to him, but then didn't dress this week. So I think a C minus is kind of where I would put the whole as the unit as a whole, because I think there have been some good things and some things that are pretty, pretty bleak.
All right. Final category here. I've seen the scores we've all listened to the scores for the first three categories. So I can't imagine this is going to be a stunning number here. Graham, coaching.
12. No. yeah, no, it's a good question. And there are a lot of different things that go into this. So some is the development of, you know, like what all goes into coaching. Coaching has so much more on them, right? It's the development of the roster and where that is. It's the ability to get the right guys to create the depth of the transfer portal. It's the maximizing what you have. And so really it is not going well for the most part. Now, I think you have to give a staff credit when a team doesn't quit, when there's good leadership, when there seems to be a decent culture and still joy about these guys to a certain degree. And I think that's all really, really important. And so there's, and I think, you know, being able to recruit, and we'll see how, where this class lands during this, and keep that sort of mindset that things, the wheels aren't coming off, I think is important. But you know, the offense is not hummed. The defense has been a sieve. You know, you got a game where you did not have a score or force a punt against Minnesota until the very last minute with the score, and that sort of game just sticks with me. And then you've got some game management stuff here and there. I would say a 2 right now for the staff.
Chris.
Yeah, I probably would have gone a lower grade than a D had I not finally seen some adjustments with that 4-3 last week. I think that to me goes a long way. The offense, I think, is still going to, regardless of what Jay Johnson calls, you can try and coach around offensive line issues as much as you can, but if you don't have a Kenneth Walker, there's so much you can do. That I do think that they didn't. There were some moments where they used Jaden Reed and swing passes that work, but those have kind of gone by the wayside with his injuries. That, you know, those things that can help replicate a run game aren't being used, like I said, with the tight ends and those quick hitters at times, you know, effectively. So some of that falls on Jay Johnson there. that I think from the defensive standpoint up until, like I said, the switch to some 4-3, which we'll see in the coming weeks, I think particularly the next two games, if that sticks or if that was a one-game thing, I'd imagine it sticks, but it's also again on tape there. So we'll see how much that is went from a surprise factor against Wisconsin to versus what actually is good. You know what I'm, if that makes any sense. So what is production from that 4-3? Is it when teams have it on tape and they're planning to face it, how are they going to attack it and how does Michigan State's defense respond? I think that's still TBD a little bit, but the willingness to shift, I think, gives Scotty Hazleton, after really just an abysmal first six games, that gives him a little bit of cushion. And then Mel Tucker, I mean, you know, you can't come into a season and talking national championship goals if you feel that you don't have that kind of team. So there may have been a disconnect there. You know, maybe the injuries caused a team to unravel a little bit. Maybe it really was death by inches, but not necessarily from the issues that were prevalent last year carrying into this year. So I think maybe you needed a little temper expectations, because as much as people want to talk about the contract, I think the bravado with which he and his players came into this season talking national title without even talking about Big Ten title when they haven't won one, I think, you know, it's kind of a misstep. You gotta take it incrementally. And you know, then that goes beyond the in-game stuff like Graham said, which you're gonna have that in any season. But certainly, you know, between the excess bravado and the lack of player development, you kind of look at this staff and you say, well, do you give them a pause? Do you give them a pass for one more year until they have more of their guys playing? I don't know. Well, I mean, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I think there are two things. Yeah, I mean, you could argue incomplete in certain stuff in the overall program,
yeah,
stuff, right? Because, I mean, I think you really have to give them a pass for two more years in certain ways. Like, I think they're – I mean, if you were thinking about a year abroad in Europe or China, somewhere where you might not be around for the college football season, and you're going to sign up for it, next year is the year to do it. You might miss something in 24, 25. You're not going to miss anything next year. And that's not going to be Mel Tucker's fault. That's not going to be this coaching staff's fault. Now, do you need to see incremental development? You need to see places where they're better? Absolutely. All that's true. But they're going to lose a lot of guys from a not great offensive line already, but we'll see how many of their young guys are ready. I think that could be an issue a year from now still. You're going to lose, you know, Jaden Reed. Now, I think they'll have enough playmakers and they'll be fine there. I think they'll be fine at running back. Defensively, we'll see. But I don't think it looks a whole lot better next year necessarily. And some of that is really not, I mean, to be realistic, isn't on them. But you're right. I mean, the expectations were not really set for that either. And that is, you don't come out and say, you know, hey guys, we're going to stink this year, but you can temper it. So look, this may be a little bit of more of a process than we thought. And it sort of people brace for it a little bit better.
So what was your grade, Chris? If you said it, I forgot it.
I'd say probably a D. Otherwise it would have been probably a D- without last week's game.
Yeah. All right. Well, these remaining five games, I guess I would get it up to a C, a plus, or a B minus, right? So something to shoot for the Michigan State.
Well, listen, that can change in a hurry because you got three ranked opponents down the stretch. I mean, you can make changes and make improvements if your coaching staff and those playing groups that can ultimately determine the final grade is much better. Because if you're getting these guys back from injuries, if you're starting to make those you know, closer, you get a little closer to the team that you thought you had, and you start to see that a little bit, then all of a sudden I think those grades change a little bit, and you say, well, yeah, it was a lot about those injuries. And yes, they were able to make some adjustments and coach through some issues. If they're able to somehow go through and get a, you know, two or three wins against these ranked teams, but that's obviously, as I said earlier, not, it's easier said than it's done.
I'm going to say something sort of ridiculous here, but this is why you have to go to the 12-team playoff. But Michigan State is never going to be in that conversation this year. But in a world where a team lost, its top receiver was not healthy. Its all conference defensive tackle wasn't healthy. Its safety in the backbone of its defense wasn't healthy, and they all come back and they're undefeated with those guys. In theory, Michigan State is still unbeaten. Now, that may change this year, but in the college football playoff world, the way they're supposed to look at it, the same way as the NCAA tournament world, this is why you got to go to 12 teams so that, like, seasons aren't over because of injuries, because there are teams around the country everywhere this happens to. And again, Michigan State was not a team this year, as it turns out, that had any shot at that. But it is sort of one of those things, as Chris said, they will now be partly judged on how they perform with a healthier contingent and with more parts. And I do think, you know, what we saw, the Michigan and Penn State game was good news, bad news for MSU. It was bad news that Michigan's offensive line looks like it can bully you, and that could be trouble.
Yep.
It was good news in that Penn State looks vulnerable. They don't look like they're going to bully you up front. And after Penn State struggled with Northwestern, albeit in bad weather too, that game at the end of the year, those last three games, as much as these next two games are intimidating, those last three games of the year look more manageable and for Michigan State than they did before this last week.
But there is a lot of football for Penn State ahead too. So
absolutely.
You could see changes there. I mean, that's, five games is a lot of football. I know people don't want to necessarily think that because if you're out of it right now, you're out of it. But, actually for Penn State, they've got six games left. They got Minnesota, Ohio State, Indiana, Maryland, Rutgers, and Michigan State. So, I mean, if they can, you somehow get through that, it'll be interesting to see where their season's at, and particularly with being at home to end the year. So, I don't know. It's a lot of – there's a lot of interesting subplots ahead, I think, that, like all mid-season things. Like, and how many times have I said this, Grim? You've heard me say this a number of times. There's like an October amnesia in college football that people forget how much things can change wildly in the final month of the year from across the national landscape and really from some individual teams as they get towards the end of the year. So that's, I always kind of make sure I put that caveat in when you get to the mid-season point that the most important stuff is still ahead.
All right. Any final thoughts before we sign off for this week? Basketball season starts in 20 days. That's all I got on my list. I don't know if we have any basketball-related notes we needed to hit on or not.
Just be kind to each other for a week and a half. That's all I would say.
That's a big ask, but I appreciate you putting it out there, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's doing anything this Saturday. They could just play it now and then take the bye week after if they really wanted. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we just got to ride it out for 11 days of venom, vitriol, and a lot of trash talk.
And I'll say this, like, nobody should, I mean, the trash talk can be fun because everybody's got the comeback. Like, Michigan State is 3-4. Michigan looks like a legit contender, and this game could go really, really poorly. And so if I was a Michigan State fan, I'd be cautious about the level of trash talk. For Michigan fans, it's 10 of 14 you've lost. Like, you really don't have a place either. So, like,
you still haven't beat Mel Tucker.
Yeah, maybe just don't have Twitter for 10 days. Like, nobody's got really a point right now.
Hey, think about it this way. No Big Ten team has beaten Michigan since Michigan State.
That is true.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And in the last three seasons, no team has beat Michigan twice other than Michigan State.
All right. You're just adding fuel to the fire for the Wolverines to put on their motivation board.
I'm throwing these facts out now. Also, by the way, this is the first time in the history of this rivalry that both of these teams had a week off before they played each other, which it's an anomaly and it's interesting. And, it's going to amplify a lot of things these next 11 days.
And this is only the second night game in the series history. And the first one, which was 2017, was won by Michigan State. So there you go. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and the USA Today Network. If you enjoy this podcast and the work surrounding it, please consider subscribing. You can follow our coverage at lsj.com, freep.com, and on Twitter at Chris Solari, at Graham_Couch, at Phil_Friend, and at LSJ Green White. Thanks for listening.